Welcome to CU Today, the official podcast of Cameron University, hosted by President Dr. Shane Hunt. Each month, we bring you the Aggie Experience, featuring conversations with students, faculty, and staff about the exciting themes happening right here on campus. CU Today airs the last Monday night of every month at 6:30 on KCCU Public Radio. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or visit kccu.org for more information. Now, here's your host, Dr. Shane Hunt.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of CU Today. I'm Shane Hunt, president of Cameron University, and I am thrilled today to be joined by Cameron University alum, an amazing person, Suzanne Hogan. Suzanne, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shane. Dr. Hunt, let me make sure I get that correct.
It's always Shane, Suzanne. It's all okay. Shane. And Suzanne and I actually were visiting last week about a really exciting project that we're looking forward to bringing more to light in the months ahead for the Lawton Fort Sill area. But Suzanne has had such a fascinating career, and I said I want you to be on the show. We always have an alumni guest, so before we get to that, we always like to start, Suzanne, by asking, what led you to being a student at Cameron University?
Very simple. It was my father and mother had just transferred to Lawton through the military. They decided to retire, and we're a family of many children. I was the oldest. So first and foremost in their mind was there a university in close proximity that was affordable? So much of education is what you bring to it. So affordability for us at that time was incredibly important, but the vast backgrounds of so many of the professors being able to go from one part of the academic spectrum to the other was quite attractive as well.
No, it is. And Suzanne, I say this to people all the time. I would put the value of a Cameron education up against any school in this country, and the quality and the value that students have. And I love that story. So you get to Cameron, you make that decision, you become an Aggie. Can
yes.
you talk a little bit about your favorite parts of your years here, what you majored in, and kind of your personal CU experience?
Okay. I always like to say that that college was the best 26 years of my life. Because I was one of those students to where I had to work and have a job and go to college. So, it all had to fit. I worked at Gibson's Discount Store. I went to Cameron on Pat T.J. Henry Scholarship. So the fact that there was a really great financial base of support was helpful. But at that time, also, there was this mixture of students, that kids that came in from the ag front, from the military front. It was just an amalgam of all sorts of people from all over the world. And so it was a good place for me to start. And every time I would get a job and advance in my education, it seemed like, well, I was going to go ahead and follow the job and then come back and pick up my education a little bit later. I was an early graduate. So by the time I went to work for Goodyear, which was the first employee that they hired at Goodyear, I was 19 years old.
Wow.
And I already completed 2 years of Cameron. So the academic advisor said, if you keep on going at this rate, and I was on a teacher's track, you will be almost as young as the students that are in high school that you want to teach, and that may not bode well for you. So I left Cameron and went to work for Goodyear, but I always came back. But, every time I came back a better student because I'd been out in the world and I was practicing that, which I learned. And I also had professors who were fascinating in the way they challenged us. And I think Lawton is such an underrated community from the standpoint of, I don't know how many times I would have a conversation. I don't care if it was in LA, New York, London, wherever. There's always Lawton, Oklahoma comes up.
Yeah.
And at the center of Lawton, Oklahoma is Cameron University.
Absolutely.
So, there you go. My pathway through Cameron was based on 26 years of having a fantastic time.
Suzanne, it is, and you and I visited about this the other day, but, I've said before to people that listen to the show every month, just how lucky and blessed our family feels to be part of this community. Lawton Fort Sill is an amazing place, and like you said, I've been shocked as I've traveled for different things for the university, and people like, oh, I know Lawton, absolutely, great people there. I knew someone who served there at Fort Sill. I knew someone who worked there at Goodyear, one of the places. It's an amazing place that always gets talked about positively when you visit with people. So, Suzanne, you have done so many amazing things, right? From Goodyear until now.
Yes.
And I love the Gibsons. My grandparents are smiling hearing that reference to Gibsons because they loved Gibsons. So, but you've done so many amazing things. I wanted to specifically ask, because I think it's an incredible institution and something that we as a family learned a lot about on a visit to Washington, D.C. You spent a number of years in leading positions working for the Library of Congress. Can you talk a little bit about that, Suzanne? I think the listeners will love that, kind of how you got that opportunity and then some of the things that you did as part of your time working for the Library of Congress.
Thank you for asking, Shane. It's one of the favorite chapters of my life. And one of the things that I will start out by saying is that, you know, my resume looks rather schizophrenic in the vast array of jobs I've had. But the common denominator has been startups or reorganizations.
Yeah.
So that I can just track right through. When I went, I had an opportunity to interview for the Librarian of Congress back in 2004. And at that time, I was at the American Red Cross, and we were coming off of 3 years of really tough work with, post 9/11 and post 9/11. When I went to work for the Red Cross, it was important to know that at that time, we had not had a 9/11 experience. The only thing close to that was the explosion at the Murrah Building, which I had worked with Congressman J.C. Watts when I was on staff with him. So when I went to work for the Red Cross, I ended up being one of the few people on that staff here in D.C. that had just worked and had experience with the domestic terrorism event. And one of the magnitudes that we had here was pretty shocking and daunting. My husband happened to be in the Pentagon when the plane went through.
Wow.
So I went in a snap thinking I was going to New York to be helpful, to be pulled back into an office with people there saying, "You're not going anywhere. You're going to have to let us take care of you."
Wow.
So that was a very long day. So after 4 years, 3.5 years, listening to phrases like weapons of mass destruction and just the most terrible things that you could imagine in anybody's day, I got a call about an opportunity to submit my name and apply for a job at the Library of Congress. Now, I came off a congressional background, so the library was not something unfamiliar to me, but I'm thinking, I am going to interview with an individual who speaks seven languages, who has all these degrees, all these PhDs all around. I will never not interview, but I don't think this is going to be a place that's going to be a fit for me. I have one degree. It took me 26 years to get it. So I go up and interview with this very stately man. He was, at the time, he was 75, and I sat down and he said, first question out of the box was, "Are you a scholar?" And it kind of caught me off guard. "No, I'm scholarly in certain narrow-casted subjects." And he kind of paused and he said, "Good, I've got a library full of scholars. They can't do a damn thing for me." And I thought, okay, you know, that's great. And so we started talking, and I asked him what things he had not yet achieved for the library and to see what I could do to help. So we finally get to the end of the conversation, and he says, "Tell me what bothers you." And at that point, I'm looking out of his window, and I see a plane go across the horizon over from Reagan Airport. And I said, "Yeah, anything short of a plane flying back through my husband's office, I can deal with, you know. And nothing really bothers me except that. And everything else is just a situation to be dealt with." And it was just this deadly pause in the room, and he seemed uncomfortable. And I realized, ooh, I think I just made him uncomfortable. So I excused myself, thanked him for the time, went back to work, and got home about 11 o'clock that night. And my husband said, "Well, how do you think it went with the library?" And I said, "I don't know. I said, I don't think I got the job, but I don't know anybody else who's been in the office of the Library and of Congress." And that was pretty grand. And he goes, "Well, you might want to go down and check the answering machine." So I check it, and it was a message from his confidential assistant saying, "Dr. Billington wants to talk to you about offering you a position at the library." And so give us a call when we can get you scheduled back in. And I thought, oh my Lord, now I have a choice. And Shane, this is honest to goodness truth, and this will work to both of our benefits a little bit later. We get in a train. My husband wants to take me to New York City to kind of clear my head about this decision to be made. And as the train conductor or the ticket taker is coming down the aisle, my husband said, "What are you looking at?" And I said, "Well, I'm wondering. He has all his tickets in the left pocket. Is that pocket constructed deeper than any other one so it can accommodate?" And he goes, "You need to take that job at the library because that's the place that they have answers to all those questions that just fly out of your head 20 times a day." And that was it. It was that simple. I'm a curious person. There's no better place for me to be than in close proximity to those places where I can find answers to those things that excite me, that make me fearful, that make me want to do things different, that make me want to be interested in things I'm not presently interested in. It was that. And it was the closest thing of my experience at Cameron. I don't think I could ever finish at Cameron because there's just so many more things to be learned.
Suzanne, it's amazing, and the Library of Congress is one of the most amazing places. I would encourage anyone that it's taking their family. If you're going to D.C., make a stop at the Library of Congress. It is still one of the things that my wife and I, our son and daughter, talk about that. It is a remarkable place, a remarkable part of the United States. And I love everything about that, Suzanne. And that kind of, you know, goes into my question that I want to finish with. There are a lot of students who listen to the show and hear that and think, I want to live a life like Suzanne has, that are here students right now at Cameron. What advice would you have for current students?
Well, it's really very simple, and it's something that served me well. And, you know, looking at the library, here is an institution that has more PhDs than just about any other federal institution. But to the right hand of the Librarian of Congress was, you know, at that time, a 50-plus-year-old woman with one degree, and it was from Cameron University. So you can compete in any place that you choose to compete in. But I think you have to just keep alive a really hearty appetite for your own curiosity and to be curious about the world. But probably the most important thing that I would advise any student, anybody coming up and trying to find their place in the world, is you owe it to yourself to find a way to be interested and things that are presently not interesting to you.
No.
And it's simple.
Well, and Suzanne, don't you think, I mean, it is a through line to me of people that I know that are very happy at different stages of their life, at different stages of their career. The constant is they're all curious. They're all curious. They've stayed curious about their profession, about the world, about how they can help and make a bigger impact. And I think that is such a great piece of advice for students.
Well, you know, it's the questions in our lives that keep us moving forward. If you're a movie buff, it's the conflict in the movie that keeps the movie moving forward. So questions are things that are inherent to our life, but they move us forward if we choose to seek to answer them. And every major discovery in the world has been an answer to a problem that has not yet had an answer defined for it.
Suzanne, this has been inspiring. I can't thank you enough for joining us, and I can't thank you enough for how you represent Cameron University. Everyone at the Library of Congress and everywhere else that you have been, I guarantee, thinks more highly of Cameron University because we have alumni like you. Thank you, Suzanne, for joining me on the show today.
Thank you, Shane. I appreciate it. It's an honor, and go Aggies.
Go Aggies. Thank you, Suzanne. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this edition of See You Today. I'm Shane Hunt, president of Cameron University, and I am thrilled to welcome my next guest, my friend and colleague, chair of the Department of Social Sciences, professor of geography here at Cameron, and chair of our CU Faculty Senate, Dr. Edris Montalvo.
Super excited to be here. Thank you for
having me. Dr. Montalvo is not only one of the best professors at all of Cameron University, but an incredible leader and an incredible positive force on our campus. And before we get to any of that, Edris, I want to start by asking you this. What led you to being a professor of geography here at Cameron University?
That's a great question, and it's a great story. So I'll go back all the way to I was raised in Port Lavaca, Texas, and I like to say that because home of the Fighting Sand Crabs.
Absolutely.
And that always gets a chuckle. So I was raised in Port Lavaca after my parents moved from Puerto Rico. I graduated from Calhoun High School. I'm the oldest of four kids. I did my undergrad at Southwest Texas State University,
yep.
which later became Texas State University.
San Marcos.
And San Marcos, yep. exactly yep. right. I earned a bachelor's degree in political science and English, double major. And honestly, the only reason I got a double major was because my GPA was so bad that I thought that a double major, like, let's go ahead and add English to it because it'll make it better. So when I apply to law school,
that'll compensate. Good strategy.
I graduated. I took the LSAT and everything, and something just felt off. I didn't do great. I didn't do terrible. But interestingly enough, and this is where the value of people that you know and people that pop into your life and mentors, you know, I like to say one of the ways that I can measure if I'm in the right place in my life is by the people that are around me.
Absolutely. You,
from work to home to church to wherever. So
absolutely.
My late mentor, Lawrence Esteville, I was a student worker in the Department of Geography. And he said, you know, Edris, you weren't sure that you were going to go to law school. And I said, I'm not sure. He said, you want to try this geography thing out? Never taken a geography course in my life.
Never. So never, you never had a course in an undergrad?
Never had a course at an undergrad. I took an anthropology yep. instead yep. of geography. Yep. And I said, you know, I'll give it a shot. So so from there, I earned a master's degree in geography. I took a year off, taught at a community college in San Antonio. He calls me up again, and he says, Edris, you had your year off. I'm core PhD faculty now. How would you like to become my first doctoral student?
I love that.
And I remember what I said was, I'll do it if I can research something that matters. And he said, absolutely. And so I did my doctorate with him, fantastic human being. I like to say that in a world where I'm lucky to have the mom and dad that I have, I'm fortunate that I had him, and I still talk to, you know, his wife, Sandra,
absolutely.
So in my life. So I earned a PhD from Texas State University, and then sometime later I earned an MBA from Texas A&M Corpus Christi.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding. So when did you come to be an Aggie? When did you come to Cameron University?
In 2010.
Okay.
So I've been here for 16 years. Fresh out of graduate school, I had a couple of options. So one was, I had three options. Stay at Texas State, test the job market next year. Go to Binghamton, New York for an instructor, temporary instructor, or tenure track professor of geography at Cameron University.
Yeah.
And my advisor was, again, my mentor. He was a retired lieutenant colonel, and he did time at Fort Sill. He's yep. like, oh, well,
oh,
let me tell you about Cameron. And he said, you know, and he also OU PhD.
Love that.
So
love it.
He it's interesting how everything kind of ties together.
Yes.
So he said, you know, I think that's a good place for you to start your career. Because, of course, at that point, that's
yeah.
what you're that's
yeah.
what you're thinking about.
Absolutely.
It's a good place to start your career. I came, I interviewed. It's funny because it was and you know the people, the faculty everywhere, but in my department.
Yeah.
I teased them still because it was a late search, so I didn't get to do a guest lecture in front of students. I did it in front of them.
Wow.
And so I pretended like they were all students, and I was like, you know, you, this guy or this person. So and it worked out because I work with some great people. So that's how I landed here at Cameron.
Well, and it's such a special place, Edris. I tell people all the time, I'd put our faculty and staff up against anywhere in the country for what they do, how they care about students, how they care about their colleagues. It is a special place. So in that, I've got to ask you about several things. So
sure.
when I introduced you, there was a lot of different titles in that. So I want to ask first and say thank you, which is what everyone should say to every department chair that you ever meet. Universities operate at the departmental level, and it is a thankless job that usually just has to navigate a series of challenges that they typically did not create. Edris, we have been so fortunate to have your leadership this year as the department chair for social sciences. Can you talk about that? And just talk about the social sciences. You talk about an area of Cameron where amazing things are happening. It's in your department.
Absolutely. Well, I am fortunate that I've always been able to watch strong leaders on campus. Yep. So that's the first thing. I can say that, you know, in this role, becoming department chair, I know what to do by watching the people that came before me. So Dr. Janda was department chair, and I was like, you know, I like the way Lance did it. So in a lot of ways, I can just emulate what he did. And then to have the support from him still, and the support from Crystal, and the support from, Vice President Kingsley, from Marge, you know, that makes my job easier. Because the first year of department chair, you're like, there's a lot going on. So, yes, in the Department of Social Sciences, we have 5 degree programs: political science, history, social studies education, criminal justice, and sociology. We have 9 faculty, dynamic faculty that, as you mentioned, are doing fantastic things. And so one of the best parts about being chair, there are 2 things that I would highlight in terms of being chair in the Department of Social Sciences. One is that we always want to celebrate and advocate for our colleagues. Yes. Well, now that's my job. That is part of my duty, is to celebrate the people. I always did it before because they're my friends. But now it's you know, whereas before I feel like I'm called to do that. And that's a cool thing.
It is very cool.
The other part is that I get to talk about all the things that they're doing. So, for example, our department, I'll just give you a few examples. Yeah. Professor Sarah Janda, she's coming out with a book called Oklahoma Reconsidered. And you know a little bit about this Oklahoma history book that's coming out. So the trade version's coming out in the fall. She's working with the Oklahoma Historical Society to produce an open source that can be used by schools. I mean,
which is amazing for our students across the state to be using that resource from a Cameron professor as the author.
I don't even have to say it. You said it there. Amazing. I mean, it is just tremendous. And that's something that is happening at Cameron
right now.
You know, that's something that you go back to what you said, putting our faculty pound for pound against any other faculty anywhere. I mean, these are the kind of things that we're doing. So, or Professor Childs, which I know you've heard about his history trip.
Incredible.
So he, thanks to the generous donors and the great endowed lectureship program that we have here at Cameron, he works and is able to organize an experiential and immersive learning opportunity that aligns with his upper-level U.S. history course that he is taking. This semester, he's taken students on a trip that aligns with his course on the Civil War. And I can tell you from a personal level just how impactful that is, because some 5, 6, 7 years ago, I got to be a chaperone on that trip. And, I mean, I was into it.
Oh, it's remarkable when you see the things that our students get to do as part of their program, as part of their educational experience, Andres. And again, so much of this, with all of these professors, it ties back not just to their brilliance and their greatness as scholars, but their desire to help students. And that is something, you know, when we really talk about what makes a great professor, to me, that's the differentiator, right? You take that brilliance, yes, but it's people who have a passion for helping our students and engaging where they
are. It's absolutely right. And I can tell you that, you know, to watch these students, it's one thing to learn from a book, and that's great. And I teach from a book, you teach from a book. But to watch these students, I'll tell you a very, very, very quick story. But one of the stops was at the first I believe the first White House of the Confederacy in Montgomery, Alabama.
Yeah.
And so we get out of the bus, because we drove the whole way on a Cameron bus.
Yep.
So we get out of the bus, and there's a really excited museum curator, and he's ready to welcome us and excited and whatnot. And he's asking our students questions. And we had about 12 students. And so he'll say, "Did you know?" And a student would raise their hand and say, "Yes." Answer.
Wow.
And then another one would say, "Oh, okay. Well, did you know?" And another student would say that this room used to house whatever. And then at the very end, his last shot, and Travis and I were laughing about this just yesterday. It was something about the cap or the bell tower or something. "Did you know about the bell tower?" And another student goes, "And it was whatever. And the poor man was just so deflated, because our students knew so much. I mean, it just goes to show you that it's not it's not just a trip.
No.
It truly is an experiential and immersive learning.
And I think students match the passion of their professors. They're matching Travis's passion for what that is. And I want to ask two quick questions, Edris, as we wrap up. But the first one is, you are the chair of our Cameron University Faculty Senate. And you and I have talked about this. I am a professor. This is my 19th year to be a professor. Every decision that I make, I think through the lens of as a professor. And I love teaching class every semester. I love being part of that. Edris, the Cameron Faculty Senate is the best faculty senate I have ever seen. And they are collaborative and they are forward-looking. And what's been your favorite part about leading our amazing faculty senate here at Cameron?
Working together to achieve a common goal.
Yep.
That's what it is. And sometimes they're not the most exciting goals. You know, sometimes the vice president will say, you know, Marge will say, hey, we need to, I need faculty to give input on this. Is there any way that faculty senate can help with that? And it's some policy that's important, but not necessarily the most exciting thing. So the first time I was faculty senate chair, you know, you can get behind something that you're passionate about, or you can just, ultimately what's happening is you're making CU a better place.
Every day.
So we worked to institute the senior instructor promotion standard. That's something that,
great.
You know, I got to chip in to help do that because it was a team effort. But that's something that forever, in perpetuity, will positively benefit Cameron. And then in terms of doing it for a second time, I knew that Cameron was going to be in a period of transition. I don't want to speak for my colleagues, but I know that, for example, Dr. Janda and Professor Crouch, who's the secretary of Jack Crouch, who's the secretary of Faculty Senate, same thing. You know, we just want a seat at the table to try and make CU a better place because we love this place. And then the other thing I'll say very quickly about Faculty Senate is that much like getting to celebrate our colleagues in the department, we get to do that on a university-wide scale and talk about people like Dana Lee, who's doing the research with bats.
Remarkable things.
Chris Keller, let me tell you, I mean, I can only say fantastic things about Chris. And I went to his office not too long ago. And did you know that he, as a hobby, makes adaptive peripherals for computers by hand?
Did not know
that. And I've known him for years. And I go in there and I was like, this is amazing. Or even in your capacity as professor of marketing, I saw... Guess who came out with a marketing textbook not too long ago?
Yep.
And that's the thing. So CU is such a place that I've never written a textbook, but I can make an appointment with you. Yep. I can come to you and say, will you tell me about this?
100%.
And we can collaborate, we can work together, and I can benefit from you, and we can benefit from each other. So,
well, Edris, I will tell you, I benefit from you. Everyone at Cameron benefits from you and your leadership. You represent the very best of what it means to be a professor. And I am honored and thankful to be your colleague. And I just want to say to end the show, Edris and I earlier this month were on the first ever CU faculty and staff team that played our students. And Edris, I don't want to taunt the students, but you and I and our team came out on top. So
this time at least.
We may retire after going 1-0. Dr. Montalvo, thank you so much for joining us today on CU Today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And thank you all for listening to this episode. It is a great time to be an Aggie, and we could not be more excited for things ahead. Thank you all for listening to CU Today. Have a great day, and go Aggies.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of CU Today with President Dr. Shane Hunt. Don't forget you can catch us on the last Monday of each month at 6:30 p.m. on KCCU. Or you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to never miss an episode. For more stories from the heart of Aggie Nation, visit us anytime at kccu.org. Until next time, stay proud, stay strong, and go Aggies.